In the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has lost his desire to act according to the Lord's will. He displays the symptoms of a soul bewildered by illusion and fear, Bhagavad Gita 1:30 purport. In the beginning of second chapter, Arjuna declares his unwillingness to play the part designated for him by Lord Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 2:9. Srila Prabhupada continues with this his purport to mantra 4. Quote, "This does not mean that the individual soul has no initiative of his own. Because he is part and parcel of the Lord, he must partake of the initiative of the Lord as well. When a person properly utilizes his initiative or active nature with intelligence, understanding that everything is the Lord's potency, he can revive his original consciousness, which is lost due to association with Maya, the external energy." In the beginning of Gita, Arjuna tries to avoid using his initiative and free will. He refused to take part of the dynamic devotional service and instead chooses to live a passive life of frustration. Bhagavad Gita 1:31 purport. In the purport to Bhagavad Gita 3:1, Srila Prabhupada writes that in this way Arjuna intended to use Krishna consciousness as an excuse to not carry out his prescribed duties of fighting. Sometimes a neophyte transcendentalist prematurely rejects his family responsibilities as troublesome, Bhagavad Gita 18:8. But due to lack of spiritual realization, he soon finds himself entangled in another family circle. Another aspect of Arjuna's rejection to be an active servant of the Lord is shown in Bhagavad Gita 1:35, where he suggests that if Krishna wants the death of Bhishma and Drona, he should kill them himself. In other words, Arjuna prefers to remain inactive while the Lord is engaged in work which will ultimately bring enjoyable results for Arjuna. In a purport to this group of verses, Srila Prabhupada writes, Arjuna has addressed Lord Krishna as Govinda because Krishna is the object of all pleasures for cows and the senses. By using this significant word, Arjuna indicates that Krishna should understand what will satisfy Arjuna's senses. But Govinda is not meant for satisfying our senses. If we try to satisfy the senses of Govinda, however, then automatically our own senses are satisfied. Materially, everyone wants to satisfy his senses, and he wants God to be the order supplier for such satisfaction. So this element of initiative is that there's going to be a field of action, a field of activity. And that field of activity then is going to be the circle or sphere within which one is going to find interest, or what will be, and that interest then will give rise to initiative. Right? But it's based on that field of action. Now, very important here is that Krishna himself has an idea of what's going to happen, what he wants done. So that will therefore establish the field in which that activity can go on. So the idea is that our initiative of how we would deal with the field and how Krishna would want, also Krishna's desire of how he wants that field dealt with, that must be made common. Right? Does that make sense? So when our initiative is in line with his, so that's the point where we have that voluntary element that we can or can choose to bring that in line or not. Right? We can volunteer to bring that initiative in line with Krishna's initiative, or we can keep it separate. Right? That's our choice. If we want to be happy, naturally it's in line with Krishna's. Right? Because everything we're dealing with is Krishna anyway. So even though if we decide to act without Krishna, we're acting without Krishna as Bhagavan, but we're not going to get away with from Paramatma and Brahman. That's not going to work. Right? So we still have to work with him. So it still, then therefore, is not necessarily pleasing to him. Right? So that's the trouble. So now, the idea is then, is that how will we understand what is Krishna's initiative? Right? How we know. So if we can interact with him face to face, then he can tell us like that, like he is dealing with us. We may say, well, if that was there, then I would always work with that initiative. Right? Wouldn't we think like that? If I could see God face to face, I would then understand his initiative. I would always bring everything in line with him. Right? Yes? That's what we would think. But did Arjuna think like that? Who was he talking face to face with? Right? So the point is the soul at any situation can choose to follow what Krishna likes or not. That's his independence. So the idea for one is practicing devotional service, then when one comes face to face with Krishna, one will then take up that initiative or that, in other words, the interest in the activities that Krishna is interested in being involved in. Does that make sense? So now how do we, in our state where we're not seeing, means Arjuna has the fortune that if he doesn't do what Krishna wants, Krishna kind of lets him know. You know, subtly, pleasantly, but still he's there to tell him, right? They're sharing the same chariot, so, you know, that happens, right? Then they'll talk and stuff. But now how do we tell? How do we know what is Krishna's initiative? Right? That becomes the point.
What Shastra says?
Yes, what the Shastra says. So the Shastra is saying how Krishna, what Krishna wants to do. Therefore, in that situation, then what are things you could do to take part in that? So therefore, there are the recommendations of the Shastras and the restrictions in the Shastras. Because the recommendations are in line with Krishna's initiative. The restrictions are against Krishna's initiative. Right? So then, what would be the position of someone who rejects the scriptures? Basically. And so what chance do they have of actually really pleasing Krishna? None. They can think they do. See, the nice thing about Bhav is that you can think anything you want. Right? But reality is something else. So the reality is not because I think it happens, right? Krishna is satya sankalpa, right? This is one of the mistakes we made in our trying to be God, right? We want to be the controller, we want to be the enjoyer, so whatever we think must be truth, right? But only Krishna is satya sankalpa. What he thinks happens. That's why when he wants to have fun, he doesn't think. He puts himself under yoga maya. She does the thinking. And he just then takes part in the pastime. Otherwise, you know, he thinks about all these things. Whatever he thinks, then, you know, it's all happening. It just happens, you know, and then it's not very exciting. Right? If you want to get in control, it's fun. But once you're in control, it kind of loses something there. When everything you want immediately happens like this, you know, it gets boring. Like that. There must be a little trouble, right? You know, something, a little difficulty. But you win in the end, of course, right? You know, of course, that must happen, right? So, therefore the idea is if we can bring whatever in other words, we want to be in line with what Krishna wants to happen. Therefore, we turn to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra to figure out what is it Krishna wants to happen in these various situations we find ourselves in. And then we try to bring our, you know, our life in line with that to the best of our ability. Right? Does that make sense? Because ultimately the mood is what's important. But the point is we don't know actually what moods go with what. You know? Like the British gentleman, you know, when he's leaving India because now its independence has happened and he can't take his dogs, his two pet dogs, back with him to England. And so therefore he thinks, if you stay here, no one will love you and care for you as much as I did. So it'll be a step down in your enjoyment. So then the best thing for me to do is to shoot you. Right? I'm sure if you ask the dogs, they might have a different opinion. But hey, this is what he feels and thinks. You know what I'm saying? So that's a problem. So sometimes what we think and feel might not be in line with reality. Right? You know, we try to make it. But nowadays, that's the whole thing. In relationships, in religion, in anything that you do, the basis is, what do you feel like? What do you want to do? which is not a bad place to start from. But the point is you want to do something, but you have to do that in line with other living entities and God's creation. So then in your mood, you should take those other two into consideration, right? So taking into God's consideration, then you have the philosophy, right? Taking others into consideration, therefore you have the culture, you have Varnashram, the etiquette. So when you consider, you know, all these things, then your bhav has some value. It has some meaning. Otherwise, it may need some adjustment. Right? Because feelings are feelings. They come and go, they move around. They're not always the best, compass, you could say, for knowing what you should do. Right? They can be an inspiration, but they can't necessarily be the guiding light. Right? Unless your mother Jashoda, where every mood that she has is in perfect line with Krishna's pleasure, then you don't have to worry. But that's called ragatmika bhakti, right? So we already dealt with that we're trying to even just get to the point of rag anuga, means following in the footsteps of that attachment that the Brajabasis have, right? They are totally surrendered to Krishna naturally. We are trying to follow in the footsteps of being surrendered like they are. So to do that, we follow sadhana bhakti. Right? So then that is given to us by Rupa Goswami, and then it works. We see how all this works? So the whole idea is that you bring it, it's Krishna's, therefore that's why we should bring everything in line with him. His initiative should be what we're interested in, because that's what Krishna's telling Arjuna. I've already killed all these people. You know, he's come here. One of the elements is side points is he'll establish religion. So that means he has to get rid of those who are not religious, who are not supportive of religion. And so he's going to do that. Now, Arjuna can take part in Krishna's initiative or go to the forest and do his austerities or whatever he likes. Right? They'll all be killed anyway. But if Arjuna wants to be involved, then he should get on his chariot and fight. Does that make sense? But it's based on that principle. Krishna is the controller and joiner. Yes.
Yeah. So sometimes, like in the example of Arjuna, seemingly externally things are more peaceful thing to do would be to go to the forest and Krishna wants Arjuna to fight. So similarly, in our own minds, the only way to check how Krishna is guiding us is if Krishna is involved, and just like Guru said in the chapter, just completely surrendering to this order, and then externally whatever Krishna is giving and taking, just be detached from the results, and then just check that your mood is in line with this surrendering.
Yes, you'd say. Because the thing is see, Kapila Muni then in the third canto of Bhagavatam then describes devotional service in the three modes of nature. And so in there then he describes that, you know, mode of ignorance is where someone's proud of their previous or their mundane achievements, right? Their education, their position, their power, prowess, money, whatever it may be. And they think because of that, they're senior to everybody else. You know, just like, let's say, a rich person is involved in the movement, and because of his money, he thinks he's better than others, and he's superior, and his opinion is more important, right? When it comes to money or something like that, he may have a better opinion because he knows how to do that. But when it comes to, like, say, chanting japa or the artik or that, you know, that's not what he's known for. He's good at money. So stick to that. Don't think that I'm a better devotee because of these things. You know what I'm saying? I'm a PhD. You know, I was, you know, a big person in the local government before I joined, or, you know, anything, whatever it might be. I look better than others, you know, or anything, you know. Oh, I was, you know. You know, I was, you know, practicing yoga before I joined, so I'm, you know, anything might be. So when we're proud of that, and because of that, we think that we're better than others, and we tend to have a separatist mood. Our own idea of Krishna consciousness is what's prominent. That then is devotional service in the mode of ignorance, right? It says you should be nice to such people, that's Vaishnava etiquette, but you should avoid their association like the plague, because they have nothing to add to your devotional service. Zero. Zip. You want to ask them something about whatever is their area, you ask them, but leave out all their ideas even of how to connect it to Krishna, because they don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's just that there's very limited what they can offer to the devotional community, though they think that they're the best can offer the most. That's why it's ignorant. Motive, when it's mixed with passion, means you worship the deity, perform the activities to get material benefit. Right? You want these material benefits, so you turn to the deity for that. Better you turn to him than that. But the point is, why it's motive passion is because there is still a separatist mood. There's still the mood that your ideas, your needs in that are actually more important, the prominent element, not developing love for Krishna. You might have material desires that you need to dovetail in Krishna's service, so you turn to him for the proper, you know, arrangements for these things. But that's in line with him. It's not a separatist. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that someone has, you know, material qualifications or has material desire that puts it in ignorance and passion. That may be some element of it, but it just means your devotional service is still mixed with these things. But this is, it's called devotional service in that mode because it's separate from Krishna. Right? Mode of goodness then means that it's in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. It's not being done for any mundane, you know, what we call general material karma, no fruitive element to it. But its weakness is you don't want any trouble. Because that's what liberation is, no material trouble. So it's tinged with that element of, that's where its weakness is. Is that you don't want to, so this, even if it was sincere, Arjuna's point, it still would be devotional service in the mode of goodness. Because its impetus is not that, actually I'm not suited for this, and actually I'm more suited to live in the forest. And I've been fooling myself all this time by doing this. Or maybe that was what I needed to do before, because the passions and desires are greater. But now as I'm maturing in Krishna consciousness, so that's not so prominent. So I see it would be better situated to be involved in a more mode of goodness kind of environment. Right? Then it would be, you know, then that would be progressive. But here it's that it's good, but it still gets held back. Right? That's why we talk about being situated in goodness, but past that we don't make a big to-do out of it. We don't say, until you're situated in goodness, you can't go back to Godhead. We don't make that mistake. It's a better situation because then to go to pure goodness, which means it's not tinged with karma or jnana, right? Then to drop from that platform when we're, you know, in good Krishna consciousness, back to a mundane state of mind, back to the mode of goodness. You know, so goodness to pure goodness, that's pretty close. It's just a matter of the situation is the same. It's just an adjustment in the mentality, like that. So it doesn't change my situation. But passion to pure goodness or ignorance to pure goodness, that's really wild. I mean, if you like roller coasters, then great. But otherwise, is you're not really so sure that on the way down that it's not going to, things aren't going to happen that's going to make it harder to get back up. Goodness is not going to make any offenses. So you can pop back up, but passion and ignorance can easily make offenses. So in that slide down into that, which then can go back up, but you might do things that might take it farther than what you expected and make it more difficult. That's why it's not recommended. Not that we're attached to goodness. We're not. The point is ignorance and passion are basically useless in devotional service. That means that ignorance, especially passion, may have, oh, gets you moving. Okay, at least there's activity, because in activity there can be progress, while in inertia there cannot be any. Or when there's too much pride, you can't actually progress, because you actually are not dealing with reality. You advance on the real platform. You don't advance on the false platform. So if the ego is there, you're situated in an illusory concept. So how do you advance spiritually? Right? You might be able to gain some sukritis, but you're not really going to be. You can't call it devotional service, really. You know, it's mixed so much. I mean, it is. It's called devotional service, but it's mixed so strongly that it's even recommended no one associates with you. You know what I'm saying?
The progress in devotional service, the progress is made when the connection is in the heart.
That's what is trying to be done, but that connection is not whimsical.
Yeah.
What we're saying is, if you're Mother Jashoda, you can be as whimsical as you like. But until you get to that platform, until you get to prema, you're always dealing in sadhana. It's all sadhana. It's called vaidhi bhakti, vaidhi sadhana, raganuga sadhana, bhav sadhana. But it's all called sadhana. Vishwanath makes this point that below prema, everything is sadhana. It's not technically devotional service, meaning on the platform of love of Godhead. It's in pursuit of that. Therefore, it's given basically the same status. You know, the person endeavoring for that is given the same kind of status, and you have to deal with them with the etiquette as someone who is, because they're a devotee. They may be small devotees, just like a baby in a community is given, you know, the same kind of rights as an adult, but everybody knows they're a baby. They still have to grow up, learn how to walk, you know, learn, go to school, learn all the different things. Then when they mature, right, then they're part of the community. So when you come to the platform of prema, then you're a full member of the community. And before that, then you're developing. But it's still considered within. A baby is considered human, but they're not adults. So they're a devotee, but they're a small devotee. You know, then they grow up a little bit bigger than when they're in college or bigger yet. But it's only after they finish all their training and everything, then you consider that they're a member of the community. It would be foolish.
Yes, because then it leaves you open to fall down somewhat easier.
Because then you're dependent upon your own bob, means your own mind. And if you're conditioned, your mind makes mistakes.
Yeah.
Like that. Because ultimately it comes back to you're only as good as your mind is. You may have good intelligence and can discern so many things, but it's the mind that makes the choices of the options that the intelligence presents. So that's why the whole focus is on the mind. Guru, sadhu, and shastra, that becomes the mind, that combination. Because otherwise, if it's just guru only, they can also, they don't root that in shastra, that can also go off the wall. Not that guru has a problem, but the disciple's attitude in the process. You know, like say, you know, Prabhupada doesn't have to follow the rules. Krishna, it says, one of 64 qualities of Krishna is he follows the rules of shastra. Right? If that's in Krishna, then what about his representative? Why would the representative do something that's not in shastra? Just because they're not smart enough or educated enough to be able to see that how whatever the acharya does is in line with scripture. Right? It's obvious. That's why they're called acharya. When it's not obvious, they're called avadhut. Right? Like that. Nityananda walking around, you know, in the marketplace wearing a kopan on his head, you know, with no clothes on. That's not acharya. He's called avadhut. Right? Advaita is called acharya because he does everything very nice according to the tradition and the etiquettes and everything like that. Does that make sense? So when it's there, it's understood because there's still, it's in line, the mood's right, it's transcendental. But they're on a different platform that we can't take advantage of. We can be inspired by their position, but we cannot take example of how they do things.
And in your life, when you're following Guru Shastra, when situations come up, by just following Guru Shastra and not your mind,
basically,
if something is meant to go in a certain way, then Krishna will, through Guru Sadhu Shastra, will take something a certain way. And if it's not meant to go a certain way,
yes,
then Krishna will take away.
So means if the sincerity is right, it will go that way. But the thing is you have to want to bring your mind in line with that. Because the point is you should want to know, why does Krishna want like this, a guru want like this? What is the mentality I'm supposed to have? Because if you don't get the mentality right, rasa is never right. Rasa is dependent upon the correct attitude. It doesn't matter what you're doing. What you're doing is there's a specific medium that's the natural thing, but it's more than that, it's the attitude. You know, like that. So that's not, it means there's a natural form for something. But more important than the form is the attitude in which that form is accomplished. So in the beginning, because we don't have either, we start with the form. Right? Then once the form is nice, then we shouldn't think, oh, now everything's right, I'm perfect, now I'm a great devotee. No, now you start working on the attitude. That's why vaidhi is always first, because you have to have the form. And then foolish people may think that once I have the form, then I go to rag, I don't need the form anymore. No, the point is the form was there to express the rag. You have to have a form. So that's where the sahaja comes, is that they throw out the form. Right? And the smarta thinks the form is everything. So the middle path is having the proper form and knowing how to use it with the proper mood. Right? That then is the prop. That's then what works in Krishna consciousness. That's what Krishna is looking for. Right? Krishna has created the world and everything. Why? Well, he could have created anything. Right? So why did he create it the way he did? Right? Why did he make it that babies are small and mommies are big? You know what I'm saying? Why did he make it like that? Because he likes it like that. It works nice like that. You know? So if you don't like that, you got a problem. So you know, sooner or later we have to come to grips with, you know, God made it, so that's the way it works. Right? That's the idea of the Ishvasha principle. It's his. So therefore, let's come in line with that. He's got a better thing going than what we got going. He is happy. His people are happy. And we hear that he's always happy and always has been happy. Right? You know, and the best thing we got here sometimes are, you know, some emotional romantic thing like that. But other than that, we just have our other great literature is all tragedy. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, what do we got going for us? You know, name us that person that was happy throughout life. You know, doing all those things, right? Everybody had, you know, it didn't last. You know what I'm saying? So that's a problem. Yes?
I heard from a spiritual master in ISKCON that one should spend 60% of one's time in associating with devotees with equals, 20% with more advanced, and 20% with junior. Now, in a big community, that's possible, but once you hit the road, there isn't that much peer association. And senior association, you can always get through tapes, books, lectures, these things. But and junior is also available.
All you have to do is open the bus door and you have that.
Yes.
What? Maybe you could
try. So is it a question of the attitude that one just has to see oneself equal with everybody, and then there is your peer association, or what's the actual definition of that peer association? Because also, in whether somebody is 7 years in Krishna consciousness or he's 27 years in Krishna consciousness, he can still be peers. So it's not like, yeah, I joined 1 month before you, so now I'm your senior.
Well, maybe you should tell that to the bhaktas that take around the lamp in the morning. I think they got it calculated down to the hour. And he came in the morning and joined, and you joined in the afternoon.
So exactly.
So they have
right.
To be like, wait a minute. You know, like that. I've never heard a specific proportion. You know, maybe there's some mention somewhere of that, but because Rupa Goswami is mentioning that one should always try to associate with those more advanced than oneself. Now, in that doesn't mean the person's not a peer. Because the idea is that why would they be friends if they didn't have some qualities that you respected? So in those areas, those qualities, they may be senior to you. While you have some qualities that they respect that might be different, that you're senior. And therefore, I've seen sometimes people, I saw a very common, you know, you have a sannyasi and a grihastha's friends, or a brahmachari and a grihastha, you know, or different groups like this where, you know, they grew up together, they did everything together and like that, but they each have different qualities. There's something common that makes them friends, but there's something also different that makes them, you know, that respect. So even with equals, there's something that you're gaining from. You can even do that with juniors. So that's that would be attitude. A second thing would be is I would think it's just a matter of, it's not necessarily on a daily. It would be overall. So you might spend so much time out on the road, but then when you come back, then you would spend the time differently. So you would have to take it in a bigger cycle. Main thing is that there's a balance. It means that one's enough time with friends that one's able to relax and deal in that way. You know, with juniors that you can benefit them, seniors that you get benefited. You know, so it's like what you can take from others is what you can give. So if you're not in a position where it is something for you to gain, then it would mean you'd lessen what you'd be able to give. You know, so I would think those would be elements to consider. Is that okay? Otherwise, in your van, you can put up, you know, mirrors all around, so you know you see yourself, and then you're with an equal. You know, and that's kind of like, I can live with this guy. You know, is that okay?
Yeah, it's a common problem that there isn't that much peer association around once you start traveling and preaching.
No, even in general, there's because it means you have peers, but then it's supposed to be those who are close. In other words, what you're looking for in peers means dadati prati grinati guhya makiti prichati bunte bojayate. That's what you're looking for. Is you can discuss the philosophy, how it, you know, in your life, what's, you know, it's applied, how it's working, take prashad together, you have something, you think, oh, hey, I can give that to him, and like that. That kind of friendship, that's what we're meaning. So it doesn't necessarily have to be many. It's more of time spent than volume. Because it's not necessarily juniors. Also, there'll be lots of juniors, but those that you, what you have to offer, is something that they are interested in or are able to take. You know, like that. You know, it's just like you have a store. If the store sells cloth, then that's for a store for people who need cloth. You know, while they sell rice and dal, that's for that person. You know, so. It's a matter of within that, and seniors, so many seniors are there that there's all have nice things that you could gain, but then it's a matter of that what they're offering is what you need and in the way that you can take it. Right? So that's not, so therefore you get rid of the thing that my spiritual master is better than anybody else's spiritual master. No, my spiritual master works for me, so he's all in all for me. But someone else's would be different. Otherwise, if we follow the same logic, then everybody would have to have one father, right? You know, otherwise, why would someone have another father? So my father's the best father. So why everybody wouldn't want to be his son? You know, so that kind of a mentality is basically kind of socially useless. Popular, but socially useless. You know. Okay. You had something?
Yes, Maharaj. Krishna was prodding Arjuna early in Bhagavad Gita that if you refuse to fight, they're going to call you a coward, you know, dishonor is worse than death. Isn't that prodding his passionate mode as the Kshatriya, his pride? Yeah.
But still, it's the passion to be in line with Krishna. That's why I made the point, is that the difference between devotional service that might be, have still has some passion left in it, and devotional service in passion is the element of the separatist. When you're not trying to bring your desires in line with Krishna, because having desires trying to fulfill that, that's passion. But if it's trying to be done in line with Krishna, then the devotional element is more prominent. Or if you're trying to do it separate from Krishna, then the passionate element becomes more prominent. So it doesn't help so much in the advancement like that. It'd be very slow. Well, if the desire is there, but is done in connection with Krishna, then it's not a problem. Like Kardama Muni, third canto, once we describe actually the transcendental process in second canto, then basically the first story we end up with is Kardama Muni. You know, it's a brahmachari with desire to be in family life. And he goes to the Lord for that. But it's not counted as devotional service in the mode of passion because it's not separate. He simply wants to please the Lord by becoming his pure devotee. But as long as he's desires in the heart, he's distracted from that kind of focus. He can do some service, but he can't do full time services, you know, complete. Therefore, then he approaches the Lord that a proper arrangement can be made that he can be married and be Krishna conscious in that, purify himself of the need to be in that ashram, and then be able to move on. Because we see in it, he moves on. We see that. He makes that statement in the beginning, and then once Kapila Muni says, I will now take care of my mother, then he goes to the forest. Like that. So you see that complete process. It's like everything that would be there from a brahmachari, his training, you know, how a marriage would be arranged, getting married, the attitude between husband and wife, raising the children, and then retiring from that, and the facilities that they would use all the way through. All that's very, very nicely explained in that story, you know, and it's ideal meaning from the principles by which it's functioning on. Like that, because it's known not every brahmachari is going to be able to arrange a flying palace for his wife that can fly around the universe at will, you know, like that. So we're not expecting, you know, the brahmachari. So, you know, it's like, you know, when he comes up and says, you know, I was thinking I wanted to, you know, be more responsible, you know, take on more responsibility. Then, you know, the first question you ask him is, so where's your flying palace? You know, and when he can answer that, no, it's parked around the back there. I kept it in the bushes so no one would notice it, you know. Like that, you know. So if he doesn't say that, then you tell him, oh, forget it, you can't get married. It's a matter of those principles that therefore, according to his ability and his wife's nature and need, he provided. If she was a Brahmani, he wouldn't have made a flying palace. But because she was a Kshatriya, and she was the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, right? Which means she was the granddaughter of Lord Brahma. So then she's in a, you know, pretty good situation. So for her, she would be more comfortable in that. And for him, because he has the ability, and he being one of these Brahma Rishis, he has no material need. He's a Prajapati, but he doesn't have material need. There's still that emotional needs, but not the, you know, it's not sense gratification. It's simply on the platform religion. That's what makes the difference. The Prajapatis are in Mahar Loka, while Indra and his crew are all on the heavenly planets, you know, like that. So he could live in that facility or not, right? Because, I mean, he's born a Brahma, so he's got the best palace in the universe, right? You know, his court. It means it looks one way, and as soon as you look at it and notice it and go, well, that's nice, it changes. Right? So that's something Kardama doesn't have. His flies around the universe, but that's it. But Brahma's, it will stay in one way until you notice it. As soon as you notice it, it changes. So it's unlimited variety. Like that. You know, that's his palace. So therefore, he grew up there, so it's not a problem for him living in palaces. And, you know, the granddaughter would have grown up in that environment, so therefore you make a palace, it's no big deal. But the point is it's just what naturally matches the nature of the two. So that you can learn, that has to be accomplished. It can't be, oh, it doesn't matter. But if it didn't matter, then why did Kardama Muni do it? Why is it in the Bhagavatam? Because it does matter. That's why one's getting married. He won these facilities for that marriage. Right? So that's the whole point. If you're a Yayavara, then they don't have houses. Their community, they don't. They just walk, and wherever the nightfall comes, that is their house. But that's the way they live. They've always lived like that. So a boy from that community, a girl from that community, she's not going to accept. She might want to, you know, wander in this direction instead of that direction. You know, you know, I liked my, you know, my house to fall under the trees in, you know, this part of India instead of that part of India. You know, but that's about it, you know. Or maybe we'll stay under that tree instead of this tree. You know, that's you know, her choice, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Prabhupada used that same principle with all the leaders for book distribution, competing one zone versus another.
Yeah, because that's the nature. It means it's like if you have that kind of persons and they don't compete in that way, they're not alive, because that's their nature. They're going to do that anyway, like Krishna's telling Arjuna. You'll go to the forest, but you're going to fight anyway. You'll find some reason to get into a fight. Like that. So it says they're going to be competitive anyway, so be competitive for Krishna. You know, like that. So that's the thing. If they weren't competitive, there's no need to do that. You know, in India, that wasn't so much the mood. It was a different mood. like that. So it just depends upon the particular nature of the local people. And then you that was what was being said in that verse in Bhagavatam yesterday, is that according the spiritual master then instructs the disciple according to their nature. There's generic that is there for everybody. It's just the detail would change. But generically, it's the same. There's no difference, because that the jiva needs to give up their false concept, you know, of their existence and accept their servant of Krishna and take that up in the mood of devotion. That's for every living entity. Like that. Is that okay? Okay. So is that clear on this? Is that all these different elements then means in line with this? Because remember what we were saying about sangati. So all these points that come up must be in line with the main point. So the opening is this, Ishavasham, right? Ishavasham sarvam, yeah. Is that the Isha, that principle, is important in the life, right? So based on that, then now this principle of initiative, still that must be based on the principle of Isha. Right? So then that would then conclude is that there must be life. This is a major, why must there be life? Because in life there's rasa, right? In existence, then there is happiness. But that happiness is inferior to the happiness that is there from interaction. Or, you know, and the root of that is action. Right? Because Krishna is Atmarama. He's happy. So he's there, he's complete. All his energies are there, but unmanifest. Because they're non-different from him. So he's there, he's happy. But to increase that happiness, then he manifests those energies and interacts with them. So it's all based on action. Because our concepts of inaction are impersonalism and voidism. So we just exist, but there are no energies, there's no qualities. So it's not a factual existence. There isn't such a thing. There is no such existence, because it's not there in Krishna. Therefore, it's illusory that it exists. Krishna arranges a place for them, like that. You can sit in the Brahman, plenty of light, you can't see anything, so you think no qualities are there, right? Or you, from what I understand, they stick you in the Garbhodak mud, if you're a voidist, you know, dark, you think everything's been extinguished, so it's all nice, I guess it's cozy in the mud there, like that. And so then, you know, but it's not real. So this action, so that means even in the realm of understanding your identity, it must be an identity based on action. It must be according to what's right and wrong. But justice can't be the purpose, the point of the action. You know what I'm saying? We don't have a relationship based on you're or I'm trying to establish who's right and who's wrong. That's a discussion, an intellectual discussion on the elements of the field of action. But it's not action itself. Right? Does that make sense? Unless the relationship is discussing that. Then we have ideas, so it's a satsang, so then we're discussing it to bring out deeper. Or as teacher and student, you're discussing it to get a deeper understanding. Then you're working in that, but there's the inspiration to know, to expand, to develop, to be able to apply. Right? But just, I'm right, you're wrong, is not application. It's who stands where. Can this be seen? You catch this, then you'll understand why many times in a relationship you use this technique of defining something, or establishing something, or proving something. And it's at that moment that the relationship gets nasty. It's exactly this point. Because if you're experiencing something, you can't observe it and analyze it. Right? You can analyze something, or you can experience it. So relationship is experience. Intelligence is being used, skill is being used. That's why there's practice, because practice means I can do the skill without having to analyze it every time. You know, I got to turn a little bit this way. Oh no, the tree's getting closer. Oh no, should I turn this way, that way, and then bang into the tree. So that means we need practice. Practice means we can be riding, you know, on our bike or doing this and that, talking on our phone, thinking about something else altogether. So we know what to say on the phone and think about this and drive around and not get run over. So the whole idea is there. Therefore, the practice means our skill is good. But that skill, unless it has that mood, it doesn't have any value. Therefore, when you analyze, but you said this, you know, and that is wrong, and I was... You're not actually dealing in relationship here. You're dealing in analyzing the field. So what happens? The experience disappears. So when the experience disappears, the active relationship disappears. You know what I'm saying? The legalistic definition of the relationship remains. You know, your friends, your husband, wife, your parent, child, that remains. But the actual experience of it is gone. Does that make sense? So that's why this initiative means that's as far into sambandha as you can go when you're dealing with rasa. Right? So we explained Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. That you can deal with. Sankarshan's gotta be already practiced knowledge that you're applying without thinking about it. Because as soon as you bring it up, bang, the other three disappear. Right? And then rasa stops. Then you're dealing with tattva. You know what I'm saying? And an exchange means it's not tattva, it's rasa. You have friends because of rasa, not because of tattva. Does that make sense? Very, very fine points. So that's why this is brought up, this initiative was brought. It's not just, we got to do things in Krishna conscious. Been there, done that. I heard that. Isha Upanishad, I read that, you know, back. Bhakta, you know, Jose, you know, so like that. No, it's a matter of, this is very refined technical stuff. Upanishads are the essence of the scripture. There's no time when we've finished with the end of knowledge. Right?
But in every relationship, there has to come that time when you can or you must discuss Sankarshan, unless both have done their homework and they
you
know
must
this stuff.
Yes, you know, it's
but
true.
But then once the part comes of discussing Sankarshan, usually then, as you said, the rasa, the relationship ceases to exist on the experiential, on the sensual platform, and at least half the planet can't deal with that.
No, but the point is because the other half of the planet has missed the point that you can discuss it by going back in and out. See, one half of the planet wants it to be always with rasa. The other half of the planet demands it doesn't need to be. But the point is if you're going to deal with a fish, it must always be in water. So the point is, how do you look at fish? Right? If you really want to get the full experience of a fish and their lifestyle, what do you have to do? You have to put on a snorkel and all those things and go underwater. That's the point. You may take your air with you, but that's where it happens. So the thing is that's like what we see when we keep taking Mahabharata. It's explained, but it keeps going back in and out of, oh, son of Bharata, you know, oh, this. So in other words, it's the point is always being related to the relationship. It's never separate. Justice is never justice for justice's sake, like that. Only half the planet can work like that, but amongst themselves. But as soon as you start working with the other half, then it's a matter of that justice has to be in relationship to the relation, means in relation to the relation. So therefore, you're using the moods of creating interest, which is Prajumna, or showing the goal, Vasudev. And that doing that must be process being done from Vasudev. Though the rasa now may be discussing some point in Sankarshan. That's why it becomes very difficult, much of the time, I'd say the common, you know, what we call nomenclature, and that's specific to a noun. What would be like, you know, the concept, what you would explain, the word, what title you would give that? Would it be? Yeah, for would be called, well, I'll just say, whatever case, the general word that one would use would probably be called impossible. But the point is it's not the action that is getting the result, you know, means, in other words, the result is impossible. The method to get it is impossible. But it's the rasa of endeavoring for that impossibility simply because, you know, the other party wants that. That is what makes it work. It's very fine, but it's a thread. You catch the thread, it works. You don't catch the thread, it doesn't work, you know.
But once the endeavor and the attention stops, then
there has to
the
be
relationship
means
lost.
The point is if relationships are voluntary. So
yeah.
Therefore that's the point is does somebody want to take part? That's always the thing. So that's why one should always try to balance that it never comes to the point where the other person becomes indifferent. Once that, then that's more. Then you have to start from the beginning and create interest again. That's fine. Okay, so we'll end here. Okay? Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Very good.
Oh, you can talk. Yeah.